So, Chris, I just realized that you were telling us to watch this movie and think of Take Me to the Magic of the Moment.
No.
On the globe. So I always thought he was saying Donkey Park.
Yeah.
Down to Donkey Park.
Park.
So he that was sound, saying
that whole song sounds like he's speaking another language.
He was saying Gorky Park.
Gorky Park. Yep.
So that's a real park.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Oh, man. Do I have things to say?
Oh, I hope we get a video.
I did not. Hey, I could not for the life of me think of what the topic was when I was watching this movie. I was like, what the hell was our topic? I couldn't think of it.
Well,
here's my book.
Down to Donkey Park.
Donkey. Well, let's just get into it then, because Brian has words. Hello and welcome to Movie Sack, your irreverent weekly movie podcast. In front of me on my little view screen, I have Adam Weiss.
AGB have better cars, but they don't always take you to where you want to go.
To his right, it's Brian Hatch.
There's been a murder at Gorky Park.
They said the title. And to his right, Eric Weiss.
Don't the ones you love eat up your flesh?
Oh, that was creepy as shit. And did you guys know who that was?
Yeah, it's Ian McDermott.
Yeah.
Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I'm the guy Palpatine? Whose name usually comes out first, Chris Pruitt. And yeah, we watched Gorky Park. My choice in the third movie within the lesser known 80s movies category.
That's right.
We need to get better with picking our categories. My one before that was just war movie. Like, come on.
That's okay. Anyways,
I have some good future ones that are legitimately decent.
Okay.
I'm just in a funk right now. I just want to do some weird stuff.
Oh, fair enough. Stop being in the funk. Wait, then.
So was this whole series a setup for the peanut butter solution?
Yes. I mean,
that's dirty.
Adam,
right there.
I have no idea what that movie's about, but boy, am I going to hate you after if it sucks.
I just thought you were going to say, I'm just going to hate you after it.
It's like you're off the podcast after this ridiculousness.
Make us watch a movie that, good Lord, probably is up there with, as far as no one's in it. I don't know. I know nothing about it, but I can't wait to put it off to watch until next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
Well, that kind of reminds me. So I don't know if I said it. We watched Gorky Park and William Hurt, Brian Dennehy, 1983.
Soviet. Lee Marvin.
I know. I was really excited. I forgot about that.
Lee Marvin entered and I was like, well, that's your bad guy.
Right.
The American.
So but I was pleasantly surprised when up until we just got started, no one had sent me a text saying, God damn it, Chris. I was expecting someone.
It's not a bad movie. It's just
not a bad movie.
It felt like I was flipping through the library of my mom's books when I was a kid. There's just those random, like if the story felt like it really didn't go anywhere, but it was just enough to be like filler to kill a couple hours reading a book on a bus or something.
And enough grisly stuff to keep going on.
This is the movie version of a murder mystery novel that you.
That's exactly what it was—a murder mystery novel.
Just enough.
It was the mystery part.
It was a mystery, right?
Like, we didn't know what the plot was, what the motivation for the murders, and there was some detectiveness going on.
I guess it did feel a little like here's your bad guy, and let's see how they get him.
Well, nonetheless, I'm even more impressed that nobody's like, that movie fucking sucked.
Save it for mine.
Well, I will say this much. This was the opposite of the sum of all parts was greater than the whole. I felt like the movie was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the individual scenes that were better than okay. because it was like I could not stop watching it. I got sucked in and had to know what the fuck was coming next.
Yeah,
but the movie was not that enticing or glamorous.
I keep trying to link, like, you know, things that happened late in the movie, like falling in love with Irina and setting the Sables free, to stuff that happens earlier in the movie, and I'm coming up empty-handed. Like, I don't know what the long-range symbolism of most of this stuff were. It was a fun movie to watch, you know, a good thriller.
I really thought this was going to be a horror movie because the detail of the murder victims was so gruesome. I was like, Chris just picked a regular horror movie for this.
I thought, no, I had the same impression. Like, even in the opening, like the opening credits where they're playing the music and you get that, like,
that fucking Suspiria music. Like, yeah.
This is going to be really scary, but.
No, that was the first thing I heard as I was listening to that music in the opening. Like, wow, this reminds me of Suspiria, like sharp drum beats out of nowhere with weird screechy streaks.
Chris, give us the synopsis of what the movie is about. All right,
so, well, William Hurt recently died, and this has kind of been on the tip of my tongue for a long time. I had seen it before so long ago, I didn't remember a single thing from it. It was like watching it brand new. But you got William Hurt, a detective in the Moscow police. Three bodies are discovered with their faces and fingers cut off, so they can't be identified. Their mouths have been shot, and it is a murder mystery involving the KGB, an American detective, Brian Dennehy, an American business mogul, Lee Marvin, a plot to steal Sables, which are like small minks, ferret type creatures.
Nice marmot.
It's weird that it came down to that.
That's what kind of like my aha moment was, like, this is what I've been watching. This is such a,
it's like they pulled that out of nowhere.
It's like, oh shit. They picked the worst, like, deus ex machina possible, like animal smuggling.
There's even like a weird aspiration or hints of
drugs,
smuggling religious iconic historical artifacts that were counterfeit or something.
Like, Russia has a monopoly on the sale of Sable.
Yes. And they are explicitly go ahead.
Smuggling some out is a very big deal, like huge deal, because they would break the monopoly, right? Like, which is inherently capitalist, right? Like, it is a betrayal of the revolution to want to maintain a monopoly on Sable. But
these are the people's Sables.
To this day, it is highly illegal to take a Sable out of Russia.
So they've never, like, I mean, I can't, I'm surprised there's...
Huh? Sorry, Adam, go ahead.
That was funnier. I'm just surprised I'm aware of Sables, but they just look like, bear cats.
Don't quote me, I don't remember, but I think they're like a mink slash ferret type creature. And what we saw in the movie were cats with little ferret costumes strapped to them. I think it's how they did that. Because obviously they can't have real Sables.
Inland. There are lots of different kinds of Sables, and
like, and I figured you think a ferret or something would work.
Yeah, I think any Sable would have worked, but yeah,
that's even funnier if that was the case.
Prairie dogs.
So earlier when you were saying the American Brian Dennehy and an American Lee Marvin, in my head I said an American William Hurt and a lot of British people, very few Russians.
Yeah, Russians.
They all spoke fluent Russian. I read that in a synopsis, like Brian Dennehy's character, whose brother was investigating the murder of his brother, who also speaks fluent Russian. And I was like, it's like that had to be described.
William Hurt's accent reminded me of Kevin Costner's in Robin Hood, where it's like, it's kind of British.
This is worse.
Less accent and more like weird word choice.
Yeah, I mean, the whole time I just kept thinking that dude in Armageddon who's like, I am Russian space station. Like, where's that? If you're gonna do it, do it.
Get canned. Well, I mean, this was 1983. This is like at Russia's lowest point in the Cold War, basically, or at a very low point, about to collapse. I mean, but there was no, we Americans weren't heading over to Moscow to film a movie.
I noticed they're
heading over to smuggle sables.
Harry Potter's asshole uncle was in there too. Speaking
of yes, that. And it took me forever to figure out who the chief prosecutor guy was. It was like supposedly his buddy watching out for him.
Yeah,
that was the guy that had leprosy in Braveheart. Remember that guy that lived in the tower that was given Ian the Bruce or whatever Bruce something maybe.
His last name Sale or something like that.
It's Ian Bannon and
really dirty face.
Yeah, but he had like all those little bumps and shit. Like,
yeah,
was it leprosy? What was that shit back in the day? Everybody got.
He was also in another movie that we watched.
Yeah.
Okay.
Leprosy.
He was in another movie that we watched. He was one of the detectives in another movie we watched, I thought.
Yeah.
I'm looking at him now.
I don't think so.
Hmm.
I mean, because it took me forever to figure out who he was in this. If I would have seen him in something recently, I don't think it would have struck me as so. Anyways, no, yeah. And then there's murder mystery and.
Anyways, and then like the guy who was friends with him turns out he was a bad guy as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a very short time span, he fell in love with this woman. That was pretty quick.
Yeah. By the way, William Hurt sure lives up to his name. I did not see it coming, him smacking her twice.
Yeah.
He's like, I slept with him, whore. And he slaps her. And I was like, this movie was made before time.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, yes, it was 83, but also 83 in Soviet Russia. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was just sort of like...
Like this was the norm.
Didn't see it coming that he was gonna smack her that hard twice.
It does take you by surprise a bit.
Yeah,
I'll say like,
and
not what you're used to.
Allegedly, I believe William Hurt had some abuse in his personal relationship with Marley Matlin, who was she just was at the Oscars because she that Coda.
Yeah, movie. I've heard the same thing that they had a tumultuous relationship because I've actually been kind of reading up on William Hurt.
I believe so. It was weird watching that happen on screen. Is all I'm saying.
Man, how awful would it be if like the camera actually, if he was still alive, cut to him real quick, like
I'll hit you.
Is this the Stanislavski method of acting where you relate every scene on screen to something that has happened to you in real life? He's like, oh, I know all about this.
I feel like this movie could have just been a British thing too. They could just set it in
Britain. Well, why did it
change it from
in Russia?
Yeah, the location. Well, is the obviously is about the Sables.
Well, it's about paranoia too, right? Like Arkady doesn't know who his friends are, right? Like, I mean, that's the whole initial part. Like, oh my God, I found these bodies because the KGB is going to kill me, right? Like, if I press this case, if I do my job, it's going to get me in real deep trouble with the KGB and they're going to murder me.
Like, and it went so far as like, well, why was the KGB so close to the case when I found these bodies? Like they were not long after I showed up. Like what?
Well, I mean, that's why he was suspecting that there was an entrapment for him because he had tried to arrest that bigwig KGB guy 2 years prior because he's KGB and KGB goes out and shoots people.
My point is, police
still need to investigate shootings, and he had dirt on this guy, but couldn't do anything about it. So
it had to be set in Cold War Russia to attain the level of paranoia and distrust that all the characters needed.
And the same level of probably propaganda that they were trying to push, like, okay, let's hit him while they're down. So the just showcase how paranoid Russians really are in 83.
And what's weird is I need to look this up real quick, but I don't think the book was even written by a Russian.
No, it's a work of Western propaganda.
Martin Cruz Smith is a American mystery novelist.
This whole thing is Western propaganda.
Yeah. and this isn't just the one off. This is like a series of this detective, Arkady Renko.
Oh, you're shitting me. Oh my God, you're right. The Arkady Renko novels.
He has 9 books, and I'm pretty sure why this rings so close to like looking through mom's books is like, I remember seeing like Red Square Mm-hmm. That one just stands out for some reason.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh, your mom has great taste in books.
That's not this one, but that's not in this series, but
can't go wrong with
you're looking at the rest of his books.
No, I was just I just remembered it was like a very un-Russian name that had written the book. Yeah. But now it makes sense. Wow. So an American writing murder mystery novels in the 70s, 80s about a Russian detective. That's just...
I mean, that's also like easy writing.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll just write this story about... It's like rolling the dice, like subject.
It takes authenticity out of it because it's like, what the fuck does he know about communist society? He's in the opposite of... And there wasn't a whole lot of like, you know what, honey? I'm going to fly to Russia next week to see how they live.
And I'm pretty sure he would have gotten bagged real quick too. Like, oh, he's doing research for Russia.
Yeah. Russian detectives and KGB.
Put him somewhere dark for a couple of years.
Chris, this is a good opportunity for you to explain to me what the KGB is and what purpose they served. I just know that KGB Putin was
the Soviet equivalent of the CIA. So they were the...
But the CIA wouldn't show up at random murders and be like, time for us to take charge.
No, but I mean, I think that's why that's part of the plot. Like, why are they here?
It's like, why would the FBI show up to, because like, what, I guess, but
yeah,
FBI versus the CIA.
Like, FBI is more, you know, internal. CIA is external, but the KGB was both.
Okay.
So there was also the secret police, the Stasi, but. Wait, no, that's
the secret thing. Secret.
Talking about the Gestapo?
No, the Gestapo was like Germany. Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, anyways, but no, KGB had greater purview. So, but they wouldn't be, they wouldn't be doing murders unless it's right down the road from their headquarters in Moscow.
They'd be suicides.
And they do allude that other KGB operative apparently killed someone that this detective was. Right. So. Yes. I mean, apparently KGB is killing people in Moscow pretty frequently. So
why was it important that the bodies be found, but be really hard to identify?
I just think that was
that's
a good
really
point. Like that is a bit redundant, but I don't think they were meant to be found. And they do make some allusion to like, oh, they've been there for like probably 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So I think it wasn't really.
They needed Arkady to put pressure on the mink salesman guy.
Lee Marvin.
Yeah. Like they,
but
Lee so Marvin, that was the main prosecutor, the older guy that was looking out for William Hurt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He was using William Hurt as leverage to get a better deal out of Lee Marvin.
Yes.
But we don't know about any of that until towards the end. Well, when he dies in the bathhouse. Oh,
so was his discovering the bodies like?
Do you think that was intentional?
Intentional. Yeah. Right. Like it was. He was meant.
Well, he didn't discover them, but I mean, he's a local police officer that was assigned to it, or he's like he wasn't just a detective. He was like the chief detective or something. You know, so I think he was like, if there's going to be a weird ass murder like this in downtown Moscow, it's going to go to you.
So they had, All right. So they needed him. They needed him on the case. So they had to make it weird. We'll skin them. We'll skin their faces.
Yeah.
Okay.
God, you're bringing up all sorts of like points. Cause means that from the beginning, the main prosecutor guy was planning on fucking Lee Marvin over.
Yes.
And he needed a way. So he probably, yeah.
Huh. But it had to be super oblique through the police.
So I wonder then who did the actual killing of those three and skinning of them? Was it?
I don't fucking know.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, I'm guessing.
Did Lee Marvin actually shoot them? Because for some reason, and that's the thing, like he kept replaying the murder over in his imagination every time he got a new clue. That's
yeah. Right. But that was his imagination. Was so.
That was a good feature.
I was like, okay. It's like, recreate
it. Do make it seem like Lee Marvin was the shooter, though, but it was with KGB bullets.
Yeah.
I mean, because it makes more sense to me that the KGB would have done the killing and skinning. And
they like the dirty work.
Why would the KGB be interested in helping break the Russian monopoly on Sable? Like, unless they were getting kickbacks from it.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. It's like he was...
Everyone was getting kickbacks. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to import, export the Sable coats and hats and shit, which I think is basically what Lee Marvin just did.
Yeah.
And he had KGB in his pocket. You know, you're probably not going to be an American businessman doing that kind of business then without paying off a bunch of people.
Right.
I think just he had that one KGB colonel kind of like in his pocket.
So I'd like to differentiate between supply side communism and demand side communism.
Supply is communism. Very, very heavy, but incredibly focal. Demand is widespread and dispersed.
How can demand be dispersed?
Like there is equal demand everywhere.
Okay.
There is only very limited yet high performing supplies in localized areas. And there's a shit ton of corruption. So it does things just don't move out to where they need to as quickly or ever. I mean, if you have farms everywhere, everyone has food. If you have three ridiculously massive state operated farms in Eastern Russia or Western Russia, then yeah, that shit's not getting out to the West Coast. Vladivostok.
I will say that the second I saw William Hurt, and then early in the movie, they introduced a woman. I was like, William Hurt's going to have his shirt off and he's going to be doing stuff. And I didn't see where it was coming. I was like,
Other than the one missing her face, she was the only woman.
Yeah. Right?
No, there's that old Baba playing the records. Yes.
There's another woman in that movie. She's playing the records.
That's right.
She did not like William Hurt coming in.
I mean, I get them fucking in that scene, which I actually didn't think that never occurred to me, but.
Oh, really? I think young William Hurt was in a lot of movies where he would fuck.
Yeah, I see that.
But. Yeah.
In fact, he was in that movie with Marlee Matlin where they fucked.
Is she the deaf one?
Children of a Lesser God. Yeah, she's deaf. Huh.
Yeah, but this movie had breadcrumbs, but it was like a choose your own adventure of breadcrumbs.
Believe whatever you want to believe.
Because it just led you everywhere by your hand, but you're like, oops, wrong door. Let's go back around this way. And
we're in the jungle, but on page 97, we're in the Antarctic.
Hey, watching this movie, I felt colder than when we were watching The Saint.
They had breath showing inside. Yeah.
It was cold filming that movie. I think one of the funny things I saw when William Hurt finally cornered Dennehy in his hotel, the makeshift gun was really like, wow, that's how you get a gun in a foreign country. But the fact that William Hurt had his badge and he's like, oh shucks, my badge. Like there's my ticket. No, that didn't give you power to do whatever the hell you want to do. You can still do that shit. But I thought that was a little bit of a weird,
I just assumed it was like sentimentality. Blactery. You're a cop for however many years. You don't want to lose your badge on something like this.
Yeah.
Plus you got to have it when you go back to work, which I'm hoping he was planning on doing it one day again.
He tried to go back to
work. I don't think this was like a suicide mission for him.
No, but that was just kind of funny. And then they just became like, oh, you are a good person. And
do you think we'll work through this?
Not good person, but.
Do you think they were.
I mean, that's how you know. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I interrupted completely.
Well, then I will continue. That's how you know it's American propaganda when the Russian detective can't even count on any of his own people to help him out. It's the American coming in for vengeance.
It's just like in
his wingman
or Eagles Dare. You had to bring an American to do a British job.
And they brought the most American.
Bam.
For that. Yeah. And they brought the second most American for this with Lee Marvin. My grandpa would approve of this movie.
Marvin is like one of those grandpa characters you write that you know your grandpa loved, but we never see him anymore in anything really, unless you want to watch something super old.
Yeah.
I know that, but. he's neat to see on screen. Yeah.
Did you guys ever see 48 hours or another 48 hours? Chris, I know you did.
No, I'm familiar with it, but
I believe James Horner did the music for that. Cause the music in this sounded a lot like that. And I kept waiting for it to go over the cliff.
Oh, you're right.
Like that part when in 48 hours where it goes din, 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 din.
Yes,
I kept waiting for that because this music kept sounding like it was amping up to that, and I was like, is this the same? And I think it was James Horner and James Horner, so it was it's like
there's a lot of that.
The Batman theme by what's his name sounds a lot like the theme from another movie that he did, the guy who did all the Batman music, Hans
Zimmer.
Yeah,
a lot of his scores sound similar where you're like, which movie is this from?
Yeah really. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah,
feel the music feels big.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
That made it went a point up for the score because I was like, this is nice, I like this score. But yeah, at the end when I saw that it was filmed in Sweden and Finland,
yeah,
I was like, yeah, none of that looked like Russia.
It's cold, but
well, it all kind of looked like Russia. I mean, Finland is right next to Russia.
Yeah, when they had 100 people on the street with Russian hats on, it sure did look like Russia. I felt like they overdid that.
Yeah, I thought that several times throughout the movie. Like, why are there 800 people on this street corner at night? Kind of shit.
Yeah.
Although I loved when Brian Dennehy showed up because Brian Dennehy is cool. I like old Brian Dennehy. He's rough and tough. Although I did not expect him to get gutted.
Yeah. And that
or them shoot a dog in the face.
That too. That was a surprise. It's like, wow. But more funny is like that scene right before I wasn't paying attention. Cause like he gives William Hurt gives him his Brian's badge back. And then all of a sudden William Hurt shows up to Lee Marvin's farm and Brandon Denny's dead and gutted. And I'm like, there's no time. Like, did I miss something here? It's like, oh, they were both at the airport or getting ready to leave and head back.
But yeah, Brian Dennehy said that he was going to head out there and try and beat Lee Marvin at some point.
Yeah, I missed that part. So I was like, how did he die ahead of? Oh, I was really confused.
But I did love, old badass Brian Dennehy. When he's like, just his one punch is just like so devastating. And then they even mention it later, like his fists like stones. It's like, that is how I imagine a fist fight with Brian Dennehy would go with anyone.
Yeah.
He would just trample you. I mean, shit. He went toe to toe with Rambo.
Yeah. Oh, he did pass away. Oh,
recently.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was April 15th, 2020.
Amy and I have been watching Blacklist, and he was in Blacklist, and they had to recast him. It was kind of sad.
Just like in Tommy Boy, he died. That was sad.
Yeah.
I remember that being sad, Tommy Boy. That scene in Tommy Boy where he dies, because it goes on for a while. They're playing like bagpipes, and you're like, Jesus, isn't this some comedy?
I never really thought Chris Farley movies were comedies.
Hey!
Tommy Boy's good. Black Sheep. Didn't really care for that one.
I can tolerate
it. I'm more of a black sheep guy.
Beverly Hills Ninja.
You know, Beverly Hills Ninja. <I was gonna say, laughs> That's the best one.
Another thing I noticed throughout the film was the proliferation of French contraband, French brandy, French condoms. Mm. They kept bringing it up. It's like, that must have been like the all best stuff to get. Like, or was it just because, I don't know. I thought that was strange that was the hot topic.
You know what it might be? You know what it might be? And this, now I'm getting kind of like deep into this shit now.
And you're the
history buff. So Russia never had a renaissance per se. So they were culturally behind Europe for a couple hundred years from like the 1600s to the late 18, mid 1800s. And it was around that point, one of the Tsars was like, might have even been Nicholas, was like, time to start modernizing. They started basing their courts off of the French courts and how they dressed. Because like traditionally, Russians all had big beards, but then they went, you know, smooth. They started dressing like Europeans and they started speaking French in the Russian court. Because they thought that was a more sophisticated language to be speaking in court, so to speak. So maybe this is a detail that the writer of the book knew about or someone that threw it in the movie that as a holdover. And this is just speculation on my part, but just like this is a holdover from Russia having a general positive feeling towards France. Yeah, no, maybe
I get that, but couple it like with like the universality of black market sales under communism, right? Like the best stuff is only the stuff that you can get off the main market.
Oh, certainly.
And they thought the best stuff was the French stuff.
But they did like they did have a bunch of stereos and blue jeans in that dude's ass.
Yeah, right. Right. That's true.
Blue jean black market smuggling, I've read, was pretty profitable. And what blows my mind is like if you can't buy them, you probably can't wear them out in public. So where are all these like teenagers getting together in Baba's basement to put on their jeans and
Springsteen tapes?
I was gonna say Buddy Holly because they were a little sure they were behind the times, but
well, they did have that song by Buddy Holly.
And then that was, yeah, the rock band was playing, yes, Buddy Holly music. And it was weird because they obviously, like, they kind of tell you, but like, okay, everybody's speaking English, but they're all speaking Russian.
Right.
So then I wondered at that point, so oh, are they was singing that in Russian supposedly? Or is this
a fantastic translation puzzle? I've heard that in the Italian translation of Airplane, the brothers, like the black brothers, speak like a Southern Italian dialect. Like quite, because that's the, I guess, the Italian version
of the other side of the tracks. Five.
Yeah.
Right. Oh my gosh. That's funny.
Well, Rome is up towards the north. So, I mean,
Rome's central, I thought. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I don't really know either.
Some,
but isn't Tuscany down by the bottom?
Yes.
On the west side?
West side? That's where all the sand people are, the Tuscan Raiders.
I heard they show up a lot in the new season of
Boba Fett.
Well, no, they showed up in the one before Boba Fett, and then they're showing up.
Oh, the Mandalorian.
Aren't they showing up in the?
Oh, Obi-Wan.
Thank you. You knew what this was.
That takes place on.
Swinging a lightsaber.
I knew exactly where you were going.
It is Tatooine, right?
It's Tatooine. Yes.
Yeah. I just got to that point when Boba Fett shows up in Mandalorian. I don't know how far behind I am, but
a little bit.
A little bit. It's all right.
But you're watching Boba The Mandalorian right now?
Yeah, I never Boba finished. Boba Fett,
I didn't watch.
Season.
I watched The Mandalorian. But you didn't finish season two of The Mandalorian yet?
Good. I don't recall what happened at the end.
I'm not gonna tell you because it would ruin. You would know if you saw the end of The Mandalorian season two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He got little baby Yoda back, and then they found the Jedi Rock.
Oh, you need to turn it
off. Boba Fett shows up and helps out with season, the chick from ER.
Yeah, that's not the end of season two.
No.
You'll know it when you see
end of
it.
Season one?
Ming-Na.
Season Ming-Na. Two.
It's yeah, maybe I didn't finish. Yeah, okay, maybe I'm
finish
really
it. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to spoil a thing, but you need to finish season two. You will just be a child again.
In a good way or like I'll be
in a
crying
good
my
way.
Eyes out?
Oh, in okay. A good way. You're going to be like, this is the greatest thing ever. Guys, have you heard about this?
Literally jizz in your pants.
Yes.
Everybody.
You got to get to the end of that. In fact, I would say go finish it now and just leave the podcast.
Vader showed up.
I'm not going to say anything.
Because I really think I finished it. And I'm just, I can't
I don't
recall,
think you finished it.
That's
you would, definitely didn't you would absolutely it. Know something.
You would have been like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I very well could have been that way 3, 4, 5
nah,
weeks ago.
You would know what we're talking about. And, you would know what we're talking about.
I can't remember yesterday.
Right. Yeah, memory gets worse when we age. What the hell? I can't remember. Nicole's like, what happened to your appointment this morning? I was like, I don't know.
I look back at the list of movies we watched, and I don't remember doing half of these.
Yeah.
I keep saying we can redo No Escape because I have all my notes.
All right.
You know, No Escape wasn't bad. I don't think I gave it the best score. But
that was the one that I lost, so we never got to do it.
Well, we did it, but it's gone.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did it. I just lost it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That one never aired. I gotcha.
Yeah. Down to Gonky Park.
Funny story about that. So I researched the Scorpion song right after it, and there was rumors that the CIA wrote that song for the Scorpions to play as additional propaganda. And the lead singer had to come. I was like, no, we wrote this song and we were just inspired when we went there, like how things are changing for the better and stuff. And just wanted to like inspire people. And they're like, no, this was propaganda.
but
I think that was one of the short little German lead singer of the Scorpions. I think that was one of his you know, like some celebrities get into a specific type of
They get really into like
his thing was like, yeah, the East West divide and tear down the wall and let's, you know, reunite the two sides and Russia and America, you know, kiss and make up.
But that's weird because he was a German. That's a German. I mean,
Germany
band, right?
was a German rock band.
I mean, like there was West Germany and East Germany. And like if you were in East Germany, life kind of sucked.
You're in Soviet Germany.
My dad recently told me a story about when he was a younger man. It might have been when he was in the Navy, because he was a land guy in the Navy. As far as like jobs go, he was never on a boat.
And that sounds counterproductive for the Navy to be on land.
Well, he was a CB. So basically, the things would work, it stood for construction battalion, is the Marines would show up, kill all the bad guys, and then the CBs would be the next people to show up to build your like bunkers and your command post and shit.
Yeah.
And then the Navy would be offshore, you know, shelling the bad guys and all that shit. Anyways.
Can I just say, Chris, aren't you impressed that you get to use your degree more in this podcast than you do in your job?
Than anywhere else in my life.
Oh, man. You should explain your degree just so anyone listening isn't like,
I'll get
what?
To that. But he literally had some East Germans like coming do some sort of training or something. And he said, and all I remember anyways, is that they were flabbergasted by the concept of a vending machine and the ability to just put a little bit of money into it and get the most amazing consumer product out of it at any point in time that you could possibly wish. And they had them in the break room with, yeah, your job.
They're going to be blown away by the internet.
I'm going to say, I got to hand it though to William Hurt or Arcady for being as tenacious a detective as he was, going so far as to cut off the heads of the victims, take it to a, not a phrenologist,
a face expert.
Oh yeah.
But to the university is like, you can do this, right? Can you reconstruct these heads? And he's like, yeah. And like that's what it goes back to my point. Like, this is a meandering bread trail of tropes.
Well, fun so fact.
Let's go to the university and have the
fun head fact. This movie isn't far off because when before Senator Palpatine became the Sith Lord, one of the things that he used to do was collect human heads. And so it was
in the Star Wars universe or just Ian McDermott? I didn't know that.
No, I was just making a
damn it
bullshit really reference cool. to the two.
That'd have been perfect.
Like, Senator Palpatine collecting human heads.
So no, I could see
he was
see
not
that.
The Belgian king.
But yeah, for him to go that far, but all this would have been for naught if he didn't find the skates of Irina.
Yeah, that was kind of weird because that was like sort of like an after effect or afterthought, like, we're going to go interview this girl, but we're not going to tell the audience why until, by the way, your skates were found on a dead woman as he was already.
There's a lot of like strong assumptions, like, no, I know this is the person and I'm going to question them as such. And that's got to be a tactic, too, because feigning that level of confidence. And that's one of the things that this book series talks about is this characteristic that was made up of patho-heterodoxy syndrome.
Whoa. What?
Huh? Yeah. Wow. This is absolutely ridiculous. It's on Wikipedia, but it's a fictional mental illness.
Yeah.
But it's the idea of misguided arrogance. And so like the way he is questioning people, the way he's so tenacious, like, I'm going to get this head reconstructed so I can find out who these victims are. And the quote here is, you have unreal expectations. You overestimate your personal powers. You feel isolated from society. You swing from excitement to sadness. You mistrust the people who want to help you, who most want to help you. And you resent authority even when you represent it. You think you are the exception to every rule. And you underestimate the collective intelligence. What is right is wrong. What is wrong is right. And it's kind of a scene against
the current.
Yeah, it's like a subplot to a lot of this character's development. Sort of
like, but he's like a dogged, anal, retentive detective, like right? He's like morally focused. He goes after the bad guy, regardless of who that bad guy is in the situation and how hard it will be for him. Mm-hmm. That's I kind of read something about that with him, but how his movie character was described.
Yeah, and normally I don't even do this much research into a movie, but there wasn't enough substance otherwise. Like,
like, well, give me enough.
What's that? Well, what's up with this Gorky Park and the Scorpion Song and
it is a
fake illness, but the author did state that it's a very real Soviet practice of diagnosing dissidents with sluggish schizophrenia, forcibly treating them with psychotropic drugs. So, of course, any dissenters of the Kremlin or Mother Russia would come down hard in any means possible. So hysteria, crazy people. Oh, you're just crazy. And then everyone tells you you're crazy, gaslighting you into a institution type of thing. Mental.
I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than being gaslit into Lefortovo prison, tortured by the KGB.
Yeah, that would be no fun. No bueno.
So what's your degree in, Chris?
Stuff. I literally went to school for history and the Russian, well, Soviet US relations during the Cold War. The Cold War is my bread and butter. So that also informed some of my like opinion for choosing this movie out of, well, ironically, the two movies that I offered you guys up were both Cold War pseudo spy movies. The other one was going to be White Knights with Mikhail Baryshnikov, the ballet dancer, Gregory Hines, the tap dancer, and Ellen Mirren, the hot British chick.
We wanted to not do two back-to-back Gregory Hines. We wanted to make sure we stretch him out.
Yes.
Yeah, there's not a lot to choose from there.
Just put Eric and I in between the picks.
Yeah.
It's never going to be consistent.
I've been thinking about that since, actually, that movie with him and Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
That I have to look down at because I can't even remember what it was called, Running Scared. I don't think Gregory Hines was the best casting role there or casting choice. He just isn't.
But there were so many buddy cop movies, you know, you can't use somebody who's in another buddy cop movie.
Well, I mean, you got like Richard Pryor was never, well, he did something with Gene Hack or Gene
Silver Streak.
Yeah, was that the Gene Wilder one?
Wilder, I think it was that one.
But was he,
well, he did
unhealthy at that point?
No, wasn't that, what year was that, 84?
Oh, so yeah, probably not.
I don't know.
Because he did Brewster's Millions back in that era too. Did you ever see that?
Oh, Brewster's Millions is amazing.
That's also a great premise.
That is it's a fantastic movie.
Spend all this money, but have nothing to show for it, and you'll get more money.
Yeah, he
it's like aggressive.
$3 million
philanthropy,
no property afterwards, in order to win $30 million. I think, right?
No, I think it was bigger, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it was 84. $30 million was huge. Incidentally, I did look up the $150,000 American that the prosecutor was offering William Hurt in 1984 dollars. That would have been about $450,000. So.
$450,000
shits and giggles. Yeah, $450,000 bribe as a Russian cop. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. I can go retire to, well, fucking
to Key West, buy a bar, have Ricky Smits buy it out from under you, pay off the deed. No, but like again, this movie had it was long. It's 2 hours, and it was just
and 9 minutes.
Yeah, and nine minutes, because I looked at that, I was like, it's 18. It's like, oh, 9 minutes left. It's all the credits. This is great.
I appreciate long movies. This is not that long to me, but it felt that long. Like,
yeah,
I agree with you. Like it, I typically enjoy that, but no, this only 2 hour movie felt much longer to me. But I was hooked. Like I wasn't like, I could not.
Yeah, I never got, I wasn't like invested, but I didn't get up and walk away either. It's like, I'm going to see where this goes.
I was watching it in front of Nicole, and she said, hey, next time you guys choose a category, can you choose one that the wives would like? Movies my wife would like.
Movies my wife would like.
Or my partner. Excuse me.
Eric. Eric.
Okay. Then our next category will be movies my dad likes.
Oh.
I think we kind of did that.
Actually, yeah.
War movies.
Boomer Dad's Olive.
Oh my God. That's the only thing my dad watches is like he has Game of Thrones on DVD and then the world's largest collection of Civil War, World War II, VHS compilation sets and shit.
World War II, greatest hits. Boner
World
jams.
World War II colorized. World War IIs. I don't know.
Yeah. World War II boner jams.
Oh man, my boss at work who she's I don't know how old she is. I've never seen her, but she's probably in her mid-30s. She lives in Northern Ireland, and she brought up what were those Now CDs? This is Music Now.
Now
This is Music or something like that.
This she is what I call music. Up
and how that was like a big part of her childhood, but I haven't thought of those in forever. And
I remember having like number 4 or something.
Well, it's funny.
Now there's you like, say
yeah,
that.
There, yeah, a few people had a few, but it never really.
It was definitely a British trend before it was in the States. Because when I went over in high school, I was looking through their CD collection. They had like, Now This Is What I Call Music, like 52. And I'm like, we're only on 6.
Damn. That's funny. I want to do research now. Where are we and where are they?
Oh, one, I think the funniest part that really stuck out for me was when William Hurt put the makeshift gun together, and he immediately looks down the barrel of the silencer like, oh, Jesus. It's like, I
thought about that, too.
It's like, I know it's not going to shoot, but come on. Best practice here.
And I'll say this much. As soon as he started pulling the pieces out, as soon as he first pulled that canister out, it was like, okay, there's a silencer.
Yeah.
And I knew that he was going to put this gun together. I knew those were gun parts, but I never would have figured out what he figured out. It did not look like it should have gone the way he put it together.
Yeah, the pen with the bolt action was the trigger. The handle just could have been like any old handle.
But the tube wasn't even like the barrel. He put the cartridge in front of the tube. The tube was like, I don't know what the fuck that tube did.
It was very strange, but if you're gonna assassinate someone, make it count and make it discreet.
Weird looking shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, that's Brian Dennehy. That's the New York cop Brian Dennehy from the 1980s. It's like he knows where to get this weird ass gun that you can take apart and take through customs and go into fucking Russia with.
Just there like
he went one on one with
John
Rambo.
Malkovich.
I remember there was some movie similar plot where it was an assassination attempt, and the guy had like a plastic gun, and he had like all these parts and pieces.
That rings a bell.
He brought the bullets in his pen, which was the one thing that you can't really make shift with the bullet itself. So everything else were these nondescript, obvious items you'd have on your person at any given time. So it was like a lighter, a pack of gum.
That seems like it'd be like a mid to late 90s movie, like The Jackal.
Yeah, like Richard Clear Gere and Present, and not Bruce. Clear and Present Danger. I don't know. It's one of those. Like,
no, I'm more familiar with that movie. It wasn't in that movie.
Okay,
but there was also a movie that used an ice bullet.
Mm.
So someone was shot with like I don't know how you would compress ice, but it was like a compressed ice bullet. Obviously, because they had to figure out how not to make it shatter. When it hit the person and it melts in the body, and then there's no evidence of any bullet or fragment. And
because it just has to be not necessarily a hard frozen, but just like that taken out of the freezer and let the outside melt just a bit, because that becomes hard but not brittle. Because like that's ice climbing 101 is never go when it's cold, go when it's kind of warm, because the ice actually grips and sticks together better and is less likely to shatter when you drive your pick into it or your cleats. Neat. I was like, huh, that's interesting fact. So even like the combustion of the gunpowder would propel the bullet to the point where it's like, okay, it's not going to melt. It's not going to shatter either when it impacts. But yeah, that's a great, it's a great murder weapon, or like a stalactite or an icicle murder stab.
Maybe like Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. One of those movies has got like a weird gun or bullet that's...
Those are rail guns.
Oh, that's right. Rail guns with like this weird x-ray shit that can see through buildings.
Yeah.
With James Cromwell.
Who I think committed
suicide in the movie. Man, we got some shit to watch, guys. We are only, I don't know how many of this is, but we are not nearly as deep as we need to be. Apparently, we've all seen
like 47.
I don't even know if it's that.
Well, yeah, because we're almost at a year and we've been consistent fairly.
Damn. So what else did you think, Brian, about the movie? I mean, I'm a good watch.
I'm stuck on William Hurt's accent. I kept trying to listen to it and he just seemed so British. Like no one tapped him on the shoulder and said, you don't, did you watch anything and mimic, at least mimic?
This was 42.
Oh.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like his vocab was a little off. He had like a weird pronunciation of a word here and there, but otherwise wasn't affecting any particular accent at all.
This was a movie that my parents would have had on, that I would have enjoyed watching it, that they had on. And had I seen it younger, I probably would have enjoyed it more because of the nostalgia part of it, of something like that happening. Because I can totally see my parents watching this movie, you know, on a Friday night.
You want me to call Vicky and see if she's seen it?
I don't think she'll remember, but Brad would remember.
I can't see him. My mom saying, oh yeah, I remember reading that.
Yeah, right. That was in the book club in 1984.
Martin Cruz Smith was such a talented writer.
Now a Hollywood blockbuster.
I watched.
Well, all right. Nope. Yeah. Is there more?
No, I was going to say I watched something else, but I'll save it for another time.
You watched something else?
I watched something. I watched on Hulu this three-part documentary series called Captive Audience. And I watched it because when I was a kid, there was this made-for-TV movie called I Know My First Name is Steven. And it was about this little kid who was stolen when he was 7. And of course, he was abused. And then he escaped and saved another little boy and he got home. And so he had to go live with his parents when he was 14, 15, whatever it was. And so he gets home, this amazing story, saves this kid. And then that's the movie I watched. It was a two-parter. And this documentary is all about the movie. And then sadly, they made this made-for-TV movie. The night before it aired, the dude who it was about got killed in a car accident because somebody ran a red light or a stop sign. So there's this whole story. Part three of the series all of a sudden takes this weird turn. His older brother, who's barely mentioned, murdered 4 people at Yosemite Park. Or murdered 3 at Yosemite, burned the bodies, stole a girl, murdered her, abused her, and then stole another girl and abused her and murdered her. And this is the older brother.
Did he abuse her after he murdered her?
No, I think it was before. And
I think that's how you worded it.
Brian was just passionate there.
I was just passionate. And it's just bizarre because like there's this feel-good story, and then all of a sudden there's your older brother went and murdered these people because he was jealous of the fame that his younger brother got from being kidnapped and escaping.
Jeez Louise.
He told the guy who came to interview him in prison, he was like, before I do your interview, I want to make sure that you talk to producers and you get a made-for-TV movie out this week about me. Like, that's how fucked up he was in his head and how jealous of his brother's fame he was. It's a good documentary series if you want to watch it.
Well, he got that fucking fame now.
That was going to be my alternative series, was made-for-TV movies.
Those are fun. I got a good one I would do.
You could have It. There's
I know
there's more.
One's making us watch fucking 4-hour mini series when it comes to made for,
but there, yeah,
there's, fine, then it's gonna be fucking Lonesome Dove or some shit.
Now they have made for TV movies that are just a 2-hour.
I know that's why. Yeah,
they're always like,
I don't even know any. I never watched made for TV movies, like not even as a kid.
Oh man, you're missing out. There was a lot of like, there was one where a guy took over a school based on a true story and Freddie Prinze Jr. was in it.
I don't think I was missing out on that one.
Exile is my favorite made for TV movie. It was The Wonderful World of Disney. Remember that on like Sunday nights?
Yep.
And it was about a group of teenagers who were supposed to go to Malaysia for the summer or something to study. And they got stuck on an island. And the best part is at the very end, they don't get off the island. They just, it's life, and that the movie ends.
Oh, what were you gonna say? You need to go watch the new Batman movie.
The best made for TV movie series is The Librarian with Noah.
Yes.
Yes. Great.
I really enjoyed the first two, but those are the two that had Noah Wiley.
How
long did he stick around? I don't know how many.
Yeah, there was a third. I didn't even know.
Well, he was in ER as well.
Right? Oh yeah.
Oh no, because there was at least one third or a third movie, because it's Rebecca Mermaid Stamos, I think, and some other random person are like the two main. But I loved the first one because it was Penny from Lost. I had a huge crush on her, and it was Noah Wiley, and I was a huge ER fan. So yeah, like, go be a nerdy Indiana Jones.
No, I watched The Librarian after I saw him as Steve Jobs in that one movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right.
That was Pirates of Silicon Valley, which is another made-for-TV movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. It's a good one. But
I guess I do know some. I just can't recall anything.
Huh. So what do you rate this movie?
Who?
Whomever. Me? Yeah. You picked it. You start.
I'm going to give this a 6.8. So
would you rewatch it?
This is my second watch.
But would you watch it again?
This is the kind of movie that I now know I don't ever need to watch again. But like the first time, in 10 years from now, I'll probably not remember a single fucking thing from it. Get curious again because of, you know, ooh, Gorky Park, Cold War shit. I like that. I've seen it, but I just, yeah. So I'll probably forget it all about it, because the only thing I remembered was this vague, weird scene at the end of the movie where a bunch of sables are running across some snow. And when it got to that point in the movie, I was like, oh, hey, that's the one thing I remembered. But it's like, it's good enough to suggest someone watch it at least once. And I think it's a little bit better than that, because it held me so I was captivated. I couldn't stop watching because the plot was fucking weird and it took you everywhere.
Yeah, all over the
place. It was nowhere you expected it to go. So everything was kind of a little surprise or weird or out of place or even kind of cheap, but still. But it's not like good enough. Like I would say a 7 is something that I would definitely watch again. I don't need to watch this one again, but maybe in a bit I might. So 6.8.
Yeah.
Strangely specific, but you know what? I'm going to branch out.
What do you think, Eric?
I give it a 6. Like it was interesting. It was compelling. I was right there along with him with the twists and turns, but I'm not going to watch it again.
Brian, what do you think?
I was going to say a 6 as well. I'm not going to watch it again either, but I was entertained for the time, and I had people in it that I like that are no longer with us. Everyone's dead in this movie.
Yeah.
Much.
A good amount. Except even Richard Griffiths. Is he dead?
Yep. Yeah, because he died recently.
What about Harry Potter's uncle? Is he dead?
That's Richard Griffiths.
Yeah. Oh, it is?
Yeah.
He died. Have to change him in
the Harry leprosy Potter, guy died. William Hurt, Brian Dennehy, they died. Lee Marvin. Yeah. Irina is still alive.
Ian McDermott's still alive.
Oh, there you go.
There we go. Yes.
Still alive, still fucking doing Star Wars movies. I never saw the last one. Anybody care to weigh in? Was it
as okay?
Bad as I'm assuming it was.
It was a decent way to wrap up a non-tilogy.
Really though?
Sure. But it's not memorable, that's for sure. I don't remember it that well, but yeah. I'd watch it. They could have been better, of course, but
so J.J. Abrams did 7, right?
I think
so. And then the reins got passed off, so he never got to finish the trilogy. So I think he had a vision that was half butchered in 8 and then just completely thrown out the window, and they went in a completely different direction. And
right. That's what happened. It was
and that's what I can't, like, I can't see this because it's just
it was the happy days like guy fucking that took over
Justice League.
Yeah, Zack Snyder was doing great, and like no, yeah,
and then they just completely changed everything for no particular reason, other money. Than Warner Brothers needed to get something out to kind of maybe compete with Marvel,
and they continuously rake step on that one. So
I know Zack Snyder cut versus the original is night and day.
Yeah,
oh yeah,
yeah, because one I could watch in a day, and one it would take me all night.
We're just going to end the show there without Adam having given his score.
It's a five.
Five?
Yeah, it's a five, but I'd watch it again. It's like, it has no substance, this movie.
Yeah.
And it's just there, but I'd still watch it again because this is like background movie. Like, I'll put this on and go do something.
Really?
I can't wait to go through the numbers on this, but I have a feeling.
It's just a weird feeling that I have about it. It's like, it's just not there. It doesn't make sense. I don't have to follow it because it goes all over the place. So I'm always surprised at where it goes. So I'll just roll with it and see where it takes me on the second watch.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure collectively, like, this is the, on average, probably one of the lower scoring movies between all of us. Yet we all basically kind of talk pleasantly about it. None of us really hate it.
It's a milk, it's milk toast.
Yeah. Very much milk toasty.
So, all right. So are we still in the category?
Fun. Yeah.
Nope. Oh, that's right. We got to do Adams. Yeah. Here comes God damn it.
Yes, we do.
So my movie.
I haven't seen this since we were kids.
Yeah. This thing, and I've.
Oh, you're making us watch something you've already seen?
No, but I've seen it, but it's more of a fever dream.
You made us watch one that you saw.
But I didn't remember.
Yeah, this is the fever dream from my childhood watching this movie. It's like, it is so fucked up. And like the one trailer we watched for it is describes it as Nickelodeon meets David Lynch. And that's exactly the best way to describe what this movie is. And the movie is The Peanut Butter Solution. I think it's from 1983 as well.
Can you give us a tease? See,
here's
on what
the thing
about
with David Lynch. David Lynch has one great product for every three, maybe every two less than okay products. So very hit or miss.
What's the worst David Lynch?
I mean,
you can think of.
Let me pull something up because that was a strong statement to make. Like, but
like, there's Eraserhead, Mulholland Drive, Blue Velvet, Twin Peaks.
Well, okay, you know
Lost
what?
I will Highway. Say
Twin Peaks is a great example. It is. I'm not saying Twin Peaks is a miss, but it is not. It's not a hit. The thing with Twin Peaks is it's very, very interesting and intriguing. Oh, you know what? I think like that's another example of how I felt about Gorky Park.
Yeah, like that's
the
exactly.
The sum is not greater than the parts.
Right.
There is some real neat shit going on, but two things. One, in general, it doesn't hold its own weight. And two, it is for such a small demographic. Like, that's a cult thing. In the most that's the cult TV version of fucking Tim Curry Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
like the definition of cult, just the other medium.
It's so campy and oozy, but I don't know, it's nostalgia, just saying F all to the norms is a breath of fresh air to watch. It's like, what the fuck is this? Is a soap opera? Is this a murder? I don't know what's going on.
So is it better or worse than Fifth Element? Eric. God damn
it. Walks out.
All right, Adam.
Anyways, The Peanut Butter Solution is it's a kid's movie. And a child loses his hair when he comes across like a witch or a sight that, and this is part of the fever dream because none of it makes sense when I explain it. And basically the way to get his hair to grow back is using peanut butter.
Is
the peanut butter solution. And I don't know how they came across this solution, but then watching the trailer, there was a whole two-thirds of a movie I did not know existed. And it gets real weird, real fucking weird. And I just need three other people to watch it with me to confirm that I'm not completely crazy and that this did exist. And kind of like The Ring, you have to watch it to pass it on.
So basically what you're telling us is you're giving us the video equivalent of herpes.
Yes. It's going to stick with you and you're going to be like, I watched this movie.
this is a movie, right?
Am I going to begin resenting you because I love peanut butter but cannot have it in my home because my child has peanut allergies?
Oh, man, that stinks. And you're going to work on a therapy? Do the parts
per million therapy? Knock on wood, but I think he might outgrow his. It's really not very severe.
Oh, that's not bad then.
Anyways.
Yeah, so it's the peanut butter solution.
Eric, you've seen this before, right?
I have. I mean,
it's a kids movie. Yeah. Like it's something that a 9-year-old in 1980 whatever would watch it, or 8-year-old.
Yep.
Yes.
And be thoroughly freaked out by it.
Yeah, because like
so kids movies. What would a 15-year-old feel about it?
Fuck is this?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was watching it. Like, well,
no,
it was 1983. We must.
Yeah,
not
you were like five.
I was zero.
Zero.
And you were two.
We didn't see it in the theater, right?
No, no. We
rented it and
85. So we had to have rented it and
rented it in 88 or something, maybe.
So Adam, you saw it when you were 3?
Probably a little bit older than that, but still enough to be like, I don't like where this is going. Yeah, the synopsis is the peanut butter is a secret ingredient for magic potions made by two friendly ghosts. 11-year-old Michael loses all of his hair when he gets a fright and uses the potion to get his hair back.
So wait, now you're fucking telling me that not only is it about a bald kid that's using peanut butter to grow hair, he gets the peanut butter solution from fucking ghosts?
Ghosts. Yeah. Well, that's what scares his hair off, right?
I don't know.
So the ghosts feel bad about scare.
There must be good ghosts and bad ghosts. This is why I need to watch it again. And I need people to see it. So I can explain away this.
Yeah, I'm all for this.
Madness.
This is working through childhood demons here. This is a good idea.
All right. So are any of you familiar with back in 1997, Jean-Claude Van Damme did a, let's say, low to medium budget European film with Dennis Rodman called Double Team.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
I'm trying to think of the absolute worst fucking movie that I could force upon you.
You have to sit through it too.
Yeah, but see, I actually kind of don't mind Double Team. And now I'm thinking Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, like some 1960 Rodgers and Hammerstein video version of a musical.
That's good.
Again, that's also a random choice that I don't mind either. I'm thinking what are the worst movies to the world that I don't mind?
Yeah. Anyway. I just need to see this. And there's a character in this movie called Dr. Epstein.
Ooh. No. Does he kill himself?
Chris would call him Mr. Epstein.
The Quest. That's another one from my childhood nightmare.
So
The Quest.
The Quest. That rings a bell.
It's like this boy holding a rifle and he's like in a lake.
I can see.
Yes.
Cover. And there's something deep in the water. And it was like old steam engine.
I remember seeing this as a kid, and you get the impression as a child that it's like a Loch Ness monster type thing. But what it turns out to be is like the arm of an excavator.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew this movie when I was a kid. I don't remember it now, but. Yeah.
Damn. Well, I'm gonna put this on my to watch list now.
Interesting.
All right.
Well, I gotta watch another 16 movies before I get to watch or choose the category again.